Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to take interesting source material, pull out the key insights, and basically get you up to speed quickly.
That's the goal.
And today, we're doing something pretty personal. We're looking into what life was like for a military wife during the Vietnam War era.
Right, and our source for this is a really compelling interview from the Military Tales YouTube channel. It's there. Episode 19, focusing specifically on a Vietnam-era wife's perspective, shared alongside her husband.
So we'll be working through parts of that transcript, trying to understand that time period through, you know, her eyes, her experiences.
Yeah, it's a chance to move beyond just the dates and battles, you know, to get into the human story, the family side of things during the war, the challenges, the resilience. It's powerful stuff.
Okay, so let's dive in. Where did it all begin for this couple? How did they meet?
Well, they met at Arizona State University, ASU.
But it wasn't exactly fireworks at first, right? She mentioned something about him telling elephant jokes at the pool. Didn't really impress her.
Huh. Yeah, not the smoothest start, apparently. It sounds like it began very casually. They were just friends, buddies, she called them, hanging out. A pretty low-pressure beginning.
But then there was a little snag around Christmas time. He mentioned having a girlfriend back in Washington.
Right, that definitely made her pause, kind of reassess things. But then his approach when she started dating other guys, that's where it gets interesting.
Oh yeah, the living room tactic. He apparently made sure he was there in her living room to meet every single guy she went out with.
I mean, talk about direct. It's pretty bold, right? Definitely sends a message, even without saying much. You have to wonder what those dates thought. She said some even commented on it.
Well, it seems like it worked. Because she said after the dates, she'd often end up going over to his place, where he was always buried in his books, and they'd just talk for hours.
So those late-night study breaks or post-date chats were probably key, deepening that connection.
Seems like it, because things moved fast after that. They got engaged in February and then married right after she graduated in May. A real whirlwind.
Especially considering his academic load. He was in that accelerated Air Force program, right? 4 years of mechanical engineering crammed into just 27 months. Intense.
Yeah. While she was busy with student teaching, so they were both juggling a lot. Their relationship bloomed amidst all that pressure.
It really shows their dedication, both to their studies and, well, to each other.
So, okay, they're married. How did his path then lead towards Vietnam? You mentioned the Air Force program.
Right. That program paid for his schooling.
Uh-huh.
But his first assignment, his directed duty, wasn't flying. He was assigned as an engineer to Vandenberg Air Force Base. So at that point, flying wasn't even a guarantee.
Interesting. So he wasn't initially on a pilot track.
Exactly. It shows the variety of roles, the technical side of the Air Force. But he wanted to fly. He put in a request.
And they approved it.
They did. He got the news he'd be training as a pilot, which led them to Valdosta, Georgia for his training.
And Valdosta had a surprising connection for her, didn't it?
Yeah, quite a coincidence. Turns out she was actually born there, and her father had been stationed nearby during World War II.
Wow. Small world. A little bit of personal history popping up in their new military life.
Definitely adds a layer to it. Now, speaking of military life, those early years involved a lot of moving for them.
13 times, I think she said, in their first 9 years of marriage.
13 times. That's a lot of packing boxes. But she framed it quite positively, didn't she? She called it an adventure.
She did, which really speaks to that military spouse mindset, that adaptability, you know, embracing the constant change.
It's a common theme. The service member is often focused on the mission, the job, while the spouse manages the home front, the logistics, the emotional center through all these moves. Remarkable resilience.
And she noted that contrast the wives looking forward to the adventure, the men focused on the mission, different views of the same experience. So eventually he did deploy Vietnam. What was life like for them during that year apart?
Well, before he even left, they apparently made a conscious choice, a decision to focus on their respective paths during the separation. He had his flight training, and she had her teaching career.
That sounds pretty mature. Planning how to handle the separation proactively?
It does. So she moved back to Arizona, got a teaching job in Phoenix, and actually started graduate school.
And how did they stay connected across that distance? This is pre-internet, pre-easy phone call.
Letters. Daily letters. Can you imagine writing a letter every single day and waiting for them to arrive?
That commitment is incredible. And the mail delivery was unpredictable, right?
Very. She said sometimes she'd get one letter, other times a whole bundle would arrive at once. That uncertainty must have been tough emotionally.
Later, they started using cassette tapes, she mentioned.
Yeah, which adds another layer, right? Hearing each other's voices. But she also said they often reused the tapes.
Practical, I guess, but also kind of poignant. Taping over precious messages shows how valued those recordings were.
Definitely. A tangible link.
So what was his specific role over there in Southeast Asia?
He ended up flying the A1 Sky Raider, based in Thailand. And for him, this was apparently a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
He'd been fascinated by that specific plane since he was a kid, watching John Wayne movies.
Mm-hmm.
So flying, it was kind of a childhood dream come true, in a way.
Huh. Adds a personal dimension to the assignment. But before Thailand, he had some intense training.
Oh, yeah. Specialized training in the Philippines. Survival school, which they vividly called snake school, and jungle school.
Sounds rough. Preparing for the worst case scenario, I guess.
Absolutely essential for pilots in that environment. It wasn't just about flying. It was about survival if things went wrong.
And the Sky Raider itself, what were its main jobs?
It had several key roles. Search and rescue was considered the most important, but also armed reconnaissance, helicopter escort, night interdiction, and close air support for ground troops.
A real workhorse.
Definitely versatile. He mentioned his most frequent missions were armed reconnaissance and night interdiction. And he flew a few different models, the HJEG, probably each with slight variations for those different tasks.
So while he's doing all this high-stakes flying, what was life like for her back in Arizona? This is where the story takes a darker turn, doesn't it?
It really does. This part of the interview is quite sobering. She talks about the negativity, even harassment, that military wives faced during the Vietnam War.
It's a crucial point.
Yeah.
Unlike WWII, the country was deeply divided over Vietnam. And it sounds like that anger often got directed at military families.
Tragically, yes. She was actually advised not to tell people her husband was in Vietnam for her own safety. Just think about that.
It's chilling.
Oh.
And she was kind of isolated too, right? Because she wasn't living near a base. She was teaching and going to grad school in Phoenix.
Exactly. So she didn't have that built-in military community support system that many spouses rely on. That must have made things even harder. The worry, plus the secrecy, plus the isolation.
And then things got actively scary. She mentioned harassing phone calls starting soon after he left.
Yeah, anonymous harassing calls. And then maybe 6 weeks later, the break-in. Waking up at 3 a.m. to find a man in her apartment.
Terrifying. Thankfully, her husband had told her if she ever felt trapped, to make as much noise as possible.
And she did. Screamed, banged on things, alerted the whole complex. Thank goodness it worked. But what a horrifying experience to go through alone.
It really highlights the vulnerability, the fear they dealt with on the home front. It wasn't just worrying about combat overseas.
Absolutely. And the negativity wasn't just from strangers. It came from people she knew, too.
Right. The incident at her school, when her principal announced she was taking R&R leave to go see her husband.
A husband and wife who also taught there confronted her, accused her husband of being a baby killer. Just shocking.
Awful. How did she react?
She told them straight up what he did, search and rescue, rescuing down American pilots. She said it seemed to stop them in their tracks, maybe made them think beyond their slogans.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Challenging that narrative. But even family wasn't always supportive.
No. She mentioned getting a Christmas card from an aunt and uncle. The cousin's husband was in the army, an air traffic controller, and the card basically expressed disapproval of the guys serving over there.
Wow, a Christmas card. That shows how deep the divisions ran, even within families.
It really does. And it provides context for the husband's own path he mentioned getting drafted, but choosing the Air Force specifically to avoid ground combat.
So amidst all this hostility and worry, she felt she just had to keep her head down.
Pretty much. She said she needed to stay very quiet, just pour her energy into teaching and her studies. A way to cope, a form of self-preservation, it sounds like.
Understandable. So after his year-long tour, June to June, he came back. Where did they go next?
His next assignment was as an instructor pilot at Vance Air Force Base in Enid, Oklahoma.
Quite a change from Arizona.
Yeah.
From beaches to, well, flat Oklahoma plains.
A big change. But she said they were happy there, found things to enjoy. Just another example of that military family adaptability. They actually said they had positive experiences at all their duty stations.
That's good to hear. And after he got back, they had a conversation, didn't they, about readjusting to living together.
Yeah, kind of like, okay, we've been living separate lives for a year. Can we actually merge back together seamlessly? A fundamental question after a long deployment.
And the answer was yes.
Thankfully, yes. But their story has another really touching moment. Much later on.
Ah, yes, the airport encounter. This was decades later, right?
Decades later, they were in the Phoenix airport. He was wearing his Vietnam veteran hat, maybe a Sky Raider one or similar.
And someone approached them.
A man came up to the wife, asked if her husband was a Vietnam vet, and then he shared this incredible story.
What was it?
He wanted her to thank her husband because his wife, the man's wife, had been rescued from the roof of the U.S. Embassy during the fall of Saigon.
Wow. Directly connected to one of the most iconic and tragic moments of the war's end.
Exactly. He mentioned they'd been married 30 years at that point. The couple being interviewed, of course, had been married 52 years by then. Just puts the passage of time in perspective.
And the man specifically mentioned the A1s.
Yes, he specifically thanked him for flying A1s and doing search and rescue. It was a direct validation of the dangerous work he did years later from someone whose life was profoundly impacted by it.
That's incredibly powerful. The interviewer on Military Tales even added his own memory of seeing the fall of Saigon on TV as a kid.
Right, reminding us how those images are seared into collective memory. It brings history down to such a personal level.
And they mentioned something about the Sky Raiders' capacity for rescue, like carrying a huge number of people.
Yeah, apparently one plane managed to rescue 16 people off a roof. 16. It just speaks volumes about the pilot's skill and, frankly, desperation in those final moments.
Incredible bravery. Though they also touched on the disappointment about the lack of a better evacuation plan.
A sentiment shared by many, reflecting the chaos and tragedy of those final days.
Shifting gears slightly, the interview also talked about the support systems within the military community, specifically among wives.
Right, that sisterhood she described. The way wives on a new base would quickly band together, help each other out.
She shared some anecdotes, didn't she? About weathering hurricanes, fixing things around the house together.
Yeah, illustrating that resourcefulness and mutual support. The interviewer had a great line comparing their strength to straight, strong pine trees.
A nice image. But the wife in this interview didn't really have that immediate community during his deployment because she was living off base in a civilian world.
Which highlights her isolation again. Though she did mention talking with her college roommate about how the draft was affecting guys pursuing PhDs, another ripple effect of the war.
They also touched again on the return home for veterans, that unfriendly reception.
Yeah, the husband saying he only started wearing his vet hat maybe a year before the interview. That really says something about the climate they came back to.
It took decades for that sentiment to really shift.
Decades. He mentioned finding some camaraderie later, working at Boeing with other vets, but said it was hard to replicate that deep bond you find in the military.
That unique connection forged in service. Though he stayed close with his pilot buddies from training.
Those bonds last. And there was another really powerful detail about that bond among pilots in Vietnam.
The unspoken agreement.
Exactly.
Right.
That if something happened to one of them, the others would look out for his wife and family. A profound sense of responsibility. She said knowing that gave her a lot of comfort.
I can only imagine. It speaks to that brotherhood.
And that commitment extended long after the war. They told a story about a pilot lost on a search and rescue mission back in 1970. His family got very little information for
It's
years.
devastating.
But decades later, the husband in this interview helped connect another pilot who knew something with the lost pilot's family, finally bringing them some measure of closure.
That's incredible. The long reach of care and connection.
And the interviewer chimed in, write it, about interviewing a special forces guy who did recoveries, and he had also connected with the family of a Sky Raider pilot he'd searched for.
It's a recurring theme, vets, looking after the families of the fallen, even years later.
Yeah, the husband in this interview is still actively supporting the son of a pilot he knew back then. He called it an unspoken obligation, taking care of their own.
It's deeply moving. So, wrapping up our deep dive on this interview, episode 19 from Military Tales. What are the big takeaways?
Well, for me, it's definitely the resilience, you know, the resilience of the marriage through wartime separation, the wife's resilience facing hostility at home, also the critical role of community, even when it was hard for her to access.
In the lasting impact of service, right? Not just on them, but rippling outwards, like that airport encounter, the continued support for fallen comrades' families.
Absolutely. It's a powerful look at the often hidden sacrifices and experiences of military families. Behind the uniform, there's a whole network of people carrying that weight.
The bonds they formed through good times and really tough times seem incredibly strong.
They really do, a testament to their strength.
It definitely makes you think about the personal stories behind the history books, the long-term consequences of conflict that echo through lives for, well, generations.
Yeah, it's that human cost, the individual experiences that often get lost in the larger narrative. This interview really brought that home, a potent reminder.